Welcome once again to Leto's Law. Here's Steve Leto.
I'm not trying to encourage people because usually they can't do it when they try, but got another good one question topic and sent to me by Jim. And he said, Steve, on TV, there's often scenes in court where someone makes an objection and the juries are instructed, disregard that testimony. Does that happen in real life and does it work? And so it's actually a little bit more than one sentence, but that's something you see quite a bit in court on television. And that's usually because television is trying to be more dramatic. So if something happens in court in real life and it's dramatic, it'll happen 10 times as often on television in court. But it does actually happen. Generally speaking, someone gets up on the stand and they're testifying, okay? And they're just answering questions as best they can, and out of the blue, they blurt out something that was inadmissible or irrelevant or something. I'll give you some examples in a second. And that someone objects, objection, Your Honor, it's inadmissible, you can't say that. The judge goes, you're right, sustain the objection. To the jury, the statement the witness just said, you are not to consider it, it is not in evidence. Disregard it, forget that you heard it. Now that we've underscored how important it is and how you should remember it, there's the old saying, you can't unring the bell, right? Horse is already out of the barn. Cliche, cliche. People recognize, wow, that's good. That's interesting. That's probably important. But technically speaking, when all of them go back into the jury room to discuss what they're going to do and somebody goes, remember the person said such and such? Someone's going to say, we were told not to take that into consideration. You think, right? But you don't know. Because what happens in the jury room, no one knows. It's all secret back there. But they're supposed to disregard it. So what you need to know is that there's a couple things that can happen here. One of them is that you can be told to disregard something you actually did hear. That's hard to do. Now, I think that most people, when asked, consider all of this, but don't consider this, but make a decision about just this. I think most people can do that, but I can see where some people have trouble with that. Going, wait a second. We know the guy did it, and they're telling us to ignore that. Well, the question is, can you convict the guy beyond reasonable doubt over here? But you know he did it. Yeah, I understand that will color your interpretation of the facts. But the other thing also, and this is a fine line, but I want to address it also, is there are occasionally things where jurors are told to disregard something or not speculate about something because they didn't hear anything. So for instance, someone gets up on the stand and starts testifying about something and the line of questioning gets cut off before anything damaging comes in. And the jury is told, you know something, disregard what you heard and do not speculate about anything else because none of that matters. None of that matters. And I've heard of jurors who actually said, I'm pretty certain if that witness had been asked this, they would have said, really? Do you know what I'm thinking right now? Pick a number. I mean, seriously. I've heard jurors say that. And the weird part is, and I talked about jury duty just recently, and that is that jurors are just people off the street asked to hear your case with a little bit of jury selection in between there. But they're just average people. And that can cut both ways. And just think of all the people you've met in your life or in your daily experience or on your job or coworkers or neighbors or relatives or, I don't know, your brother's wife's family. And you know that there's some people out there who might be the kind you'd say, you know, I think that witness is about to say something. I think they were going to tell us that they did it. You know, so, but the real thing is, if you've heard some evidence, can you disregard it? And if you can't, then how is a trial fair in the first place? And that's the thing. And in most cases, if they're prepared well and you've got good attorneys on both sides who've sunk their time into handling the case properly, they know before the jury is impaneled what the real problem areas in the case are. And so if you know that there's a witness who's going to be tempted to speak out of line about something they shouldn't speak about. You file what's called a motion in limine, and that is the fancy term for a pretrial motion regarding evidence. And you can file motions in limine for a variety of other reasons, but the most common one you see is, we understand that the defense has a witness who might testify to this, this, and this, and however, if they are going to testify to this, that is inadmissible. We want a ruling before the trial starts to exclude that from evidence and to prohibit and forbid that witness from testifying to it. And if you can make that argument before trial and the judge buys it, the judge grants the motion, and they'll tell the other side, you tell your witness, they are not to talk about this, and you, the attorney, don't ask them. And if they do, they're in trouble. That could be contempt of court. And so I've done that before in a case where I've actually had a witness who's going to testify about something, and I knew the other set of witnesses was going to testify about something, and I knew that there's a chance that their witness was going to tap dance into this area that was inappropriate. And I bring a motion to limine and say, I want an order now excluding that from evidence. And I've won a few of those, I've lost a few of those, and I've also seen where judges go, I'm going to play that by ear. Problem, of course, is what that means is they're going to ask the question, I'm going to object, and the judge will say, well, I need to hear what they're going to testify to. And if the jury's still in the room, what good's that do us? So sometimes you can do what's called an offer of proof, where the jury's not in the room, and you have the witness testify, the judge hears, and the judge goes, oh, yes or no. The judge can say yes, you bring the jury back in, you do it all over again. But the motion in limine should resolve those issues if you thought of this in time. And like I said, in many of the cases I've had where I had these issues, I knew about these things months before the trial because everyone knows what is going to happen here. And quite often these things happen because they pop up at pretrial conferences, settlement conferences, and so on. And I've been to a settlement conference before where the case didn't settle and it went to trial. And at the settlement conference, my opponent was hammering on something that was irrelevant. And I would say to the judge, you know, Your Honor, if we go to trial, that's not getting into evidence. So they shouldn't really be dragging it out here. And sometimes I've had judges say, you know something, you're right. And I've had judges say, yeah, you know something, they just, we're settling here, it's all off the record, who cares? But the real point of this is that there are things out there that should not get into evidence. And I know there's people out there who think, Steve, if someone goes to trial, just throw it all into the courtroom and let the jury pick. Just let them dig through it and pick. And you shouldn't be keeping stuff from the jury. But I can think of examples where most people agree with me. So let's suppose, and again, I'm going to give you facts. Assume these facts are true. Every time I give a hypothetical, I get people argue with me. I say, Steve, no, in your, see, in, assume these facts are true. There's a defendant who gets arrested. He's charged with a crime. They start questioning him. He keeps adamantly refusing to say he had anything to do with it. He keeps denying it. He had nothing to do with it. Eventually, the police get frustrated and start beating him. After beating him for 45 minutes, he confesses to the crime to make the beating stop. Someone who happens to be walking through the hallway just as the beating stops and the man confesses, here's the confession. So you put that person on the stand and say, when you're walking down the hallway, did you hear the defendant say anything? Yes. What'd you hear him say? I did it. I killed him. Should that be admissible? It's a confession. Guy admitted he did it after a 45-minute beating. And so you understand that that confession should not be admissible under any circumstances. And yet, the person walking by the room would be testifying truthfully. I heard him say, I did it. I killed the guy. I did it. I heard him say that. But because they walked up at the end, they didn't hear the 45-minute beating that preceded it. So, yeah. There are some things that shouldn't get in, and there's a reason for it. So, if you had that case, and you saw on the witness list that this person walking by who heard the confession is going to testify that they heard the confession, that's inadmissible. You bring a motion in limine and say, Your Honor, the evidence shows, according to the hypothetical Mr. Leto pointed out, The man is beaten for 45 minutes. And to make the beating stop, he confessed to it. And again, those are my facts. Don't say, Steve, what if? No, my facts are 45-minute beating. He didn't do it, but he said he did to make the beating stop. Okay? Motion in limine, that person should not be allowed to testify to the confession they heard because there was a 45-minute beating that preceded it, and he just did that to make the beating stop. And assuming my facts are true, the judge would say, you are correct, that will not get in. But you can imagine how, if someone didn't file that motion in limine, person gets on the stand, says, I was walking down the hallway, I heard the guy say, I did it, I killed the guy. Now, what do I do? On cross-examination, I could say, isn't it true that the 45 minutes before that the guy's being beaten? I don't know, I just got there. Now what do? Put the cops in the stand? No, we weren't beating the guy. We were just sitting there talking to him. The only thing you could do at this point is put your client on the stand. As defense attorneys will tell you, there's three rules of being a defense attorney. Number one, never put your client on the stand. Number two, get your retainer up front in cash. Number three, never put your client on the stand. And it's funny because it's true. So, with respect to whether or not jurors are ever told to disregard something in real life, yeah, it happens all the time. But on the most important stuff, it should have been excluded before trial. And if it really was a surprise, then you got the issue of trying to explain to the jury, disregard that. Hypothetically, you could also get a mistrial. Because if the jury's been impaneled and this is a criminal case, you can't be tried twice. And so it's not uncommon where something really egregious has gotten in, where a judge will turn to the defense counsel and say, do you guys want a mistrial on this one? And if you say yes, the judge will say, mistrial, excuse the juror, we're going to have another trial, we're going to start over. And prosecutor, next time you do not do that. You do not do that. And that happens also. So a mistrial, theoretically, is one remedy in a criminal setting. In a civil setting, you won't see that as often. You'll usually just see an instruction saying, do not take that into account. And you hope that the jurors are capable of separating out the stuff that they got into evidence and the stuff that didn't get in, they were told to specifically disregard. Because most people go, but that's the good stuff. Well, that is the good stuff, but it's inadmissible good stuff. So there you go. Jim, thanks for sending it. Great question. Questions or comments, put them below. And I'm going to let you know one time right now. This right here is a shirt. I've mentioned before in a video a while back that my favorite restaurant in Michigan is called The Highland House. And this is a shirt from The Highland House. I ate there on Sunday. And I was talking to my waitress, and I said, you guys are all wearing those shirts. I'd love to have one of those shirts. I've been going to this restaurant since 1977. I said, if you can make one of those shirts in a double X, get into my possession. I'll wear it in a video because I love you guys. And here we are. Here we are. So there you go. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you for watching Leto's Law. Don't do anything you don't want to see splashed in the headlines tomorrow.